suicide shocker, the man who helped Jeffrey Epstein traffic girls as young as 12 has also hanged himself in jail. They may have cheated justice, but they couldn't take their ugly secrets to the grave with them. Two of their survivors join me tonight. And the royal family hit with more scandals. Can the British monarchy survive it? Or will the Queen go down in history as Elizabeth the Last? And then Britney Spears, goodbye 13-year conservatorship, hello $15 million book deal. Why Britney is earning Bill Clinton money for upcoming historic tell-all memoir. And later, just look at that face. Who could be mad at that? Answer, nobody. But unscrupulous trainers who charge thousands for service dogs that really aren't, that's another story, and you'll see it tonight on Banfield. Hello and welcome to Banfield. I'm Brian Enten in tonight for Ashley. We begin with what President Biden calls the beginning of a Russian invasion of Ukraine. The question tonight is whether a full-on invasion is coming and what the U.S., UN, and NATO will do if it does. For now, Mr. Biden is blocking Russia's government from Western financial markets and sanctioning two major banks in Russia. This after Putin declared two regions in eastern Ukraine sovereign states and ordered in Russia troops as so-called peacekeepers. Today, the UN Secretary General joined a chorus of condemnation. Mr. Biden said there's nothing peaceful about Moscow's intentions.
Russia's moved troops closer to Ukraine's border with Russia. Russia's naval vessels are maneuvering in the Black Sea to Ukraine's south, including amphibious assault ships, missile cruisers, and submarines. Russia's moved supplies of blood and medical equipment into position on their border. You don't need blood unless you plan on starting a war.
The U.S. estimates a minimum of 150,000 Russian troops are massed on Ukraine's borders. And while President Biden says the U.S. won't fight Russian military over Ukraine, he is sending more planes and hundreds more troops to the Baltics, Poland, and elsewhere in Eastern Europe. We will, of course, continue to follow this, let you know if anything develops over the next hour or really all night long. And moving on, just when we thought we'd heard the last of Jeffrey Epstein, we get another reminder of the horrors he committed against young women and girls. The latest comes in the form of yet another jailhouse suicide. This time it was modeling agent Jean-Luc Brunel, who hung himself. Brunel, a longtime associate of Epstein, was found dead Saturday in his French jail cell. He was being held on suspicion of rape, trafficking, sexual exploitation of underage girls. Brunel was detained at the Paris airport back in 2020 as part of a larger probe into the international sex trafficking charges against Epstein. Brunel was considered central to the French part of the investigation. Epstein had an apartment in Paris, and Brunel found women and girls for Epstein and his friends, luring them with promises of modeling work. Police right now are investigating Brunel's hanging, the same method Epstein used to kill himself in a jail cell in 2019. Now, the similarity between the two deaths has revived the online conspiracy theory that Epstein was murdered by his wealthy and powerful friends. And while there's no proof to confirm any of that, there is plenty of proof about just how ugly the modeling business can be. I'm joined right now by two people who unfortunately know all too well about the dark side of the modeling world. Zoe Brock is a former model at age 17. She was sent to live with Jean-Luc Brunel to begin her modeling career. And Lauren Cole, a former model who is currently a celebrity makeup artist and author, she was a model at Brunel's agency. Thank you. Thank you so much for being here. I mean, it's so important to hear from survivors like you. And I'm sorry for what you had to go through. Zoe, I want to start with you. What was your reaction when you heard about this suicide?
Forgive me if there's a bit of a delay. I'm phoning in from New Zealand. To be honest, it was about 6:30 in the morning when I looked at the news and I saw it, and I felt nothing but slight joy that it was over. I didn't feel sad. I wasn't elated, but I felt like, oh, good. And then a little bit of nonchalance, and then I got on with my day. That's how I felt.
And Lauren, I want to bring you in. I mean, I want to know what you thought, especially in light of what we saw happen with Epstein and the certainly mysterious circumstances under which he died. What did you think when you got the news?
Well, I was thrilled to death. And I believe that it was not a suicide because I don't believe that narcissists kill themselves.
Zoe, I want to go back to when you first started in Paris. I know you were a teenager when you started modeling. Obviously, it was a dream. When did you realize this was not exactly what you signed up for?
Fairly quickly. I was placed in Jean-Luc's home because I was underage and because my mother told me, my mother was told by my agent in Australia that it was the safest place for me. And it was for about 3 weeks because Jean-Luc wasn't there. I think it's really easy to look at this story also and think, well, modeling agencies, CD stories, but this was a really respected agency. It was one of the best in the world at that point. So anyone could be forgiven for thinking that it was legitimate, but just about like any narcissist or psychopath, Jean-Luc was able to compartmentalize. So there were the girls that he used and abused, and there were the girls that legitimately made him and his agency a ton of money. And unfortunately, I guess I fell into the first category. And once he came back from his scouting trip, getting up to who knows what around the world, he fairly quickly, within the first sort of 6 hours of being back, informed me that I had to have sex with him and gave me drugs. And once I managed to avoid him and it became clear to him that I wasn't going to comply and I wasn't going to be easy, I was removed, sent to a really yucky place to stay, and had my reputation slandered around Europe. And unfortunately, I left behind another underage girl who has not come forward, who I know had a really rotten time when I wasn't
there
to help.
It's so crazy to think. Yeah, it's crazy to think, Zoe, that you go there to model and you end up having to stay in this man's house. Lauren, I want to bring you in. It's my understanding. I mean, you actually had to fight him off at one point. And did your boyfriend have to get involved?
Well, what happened was I was a bit more established at the time, and I was in New York. And I followed my boyfriend back, who was French. And I went to Karen's because at the time it was the hottest agency. And he took me, and every single day I'd call in for my appointments, and he'd grab the phone from the booker, and he'd harass me to go out to dinner with him. And I made it abundantly clear every single day, I'm here, I'm in love with my boyfriend, I have no desire to go out with you. And he wouldn't stop. And I took it with a grain of salt, because once you're in the industry for a while, you come up across the Jean-Lucs or the men who proposition and hassle you. But it became ridiculous. And then one day he just grabbed the phone and he said, "Miss Cole, if you don't get off your high horse and go to dinner with me, you're not going to get any work." And I just used the four-letter word, told him where to go, came in there the next day, took my portfolios, and I left. And then one night I was out at the palace with my boyfriend, and we saw him, and I just went with my boyfriend up to him, and I said, "Oh, Jean-Luc." And I introduced him, and I said, "Take a good look. Do you really think you could compete with him?" And I just laughed in his face.
Wow, so you turned it right around on him, and that's great. I mean, obviously, guys like this don't like when you say no, but it's awful that would then turn around and hurt your career. Zoe, tell me what happened with you after you told him no. You said back off. He really started to slander your name, from what I've heard.
Yeah, he told all my other agencies in Europe that I was a coke addict, which was charming and ironic, considering he was the one chopping up massive quantities of the stuff in his bedroom the first time I met him.
And did that did it have an impact on your career from there? I mean, did that actually change things?
Absolutely. and everything that happened in Paris at that time. I mean, I was tipped to be quite a successful girl, but I found everything that happened very upsetting. And after my stint in Paris, instead of continuing on and going to Italy and all the other places that I had been scheduled to go to, I just went back to Australia. A, the agencies didn't want me because I was trouble, and B, it was frankly just chaotic and exhausting, and yeah, just didn't feel safe.
So is there any sort of support system for models? I mean, I hear about what the women still go through, and you know, what they went through 20 years ago seems like it was 10 times worse. I mean, Lauren, was there anything you could do or anyone you could talk to during that time?
Unfortunately not. And what I find so upsetting is I believe that they did a segment on him in the 90s and everything came to light and he still was continued to do what he did. And nobody ever did mm-hmm. anything about it. And young, impressionable girls, they go to his agency, they go abroad, and they don't know how to fight something like that. So they're victims. And from what I surmise, what he couldn't get, he drugged them, and he had his way with them, and then he threatened them, and he ruined them.
Do you think things have changed enough, Lauren? I mean, has it changed enough now? I mean, have things gotten better for the younger models?
I certainly hope so. When I became a makeup artist, I had gone back to Italy to do a job, and I ran into a friend of mine who was a very well-known photographer, and we had lunch. And I got the story straight from the horse's mouth, what the buzz was in the fashion world. But apparently, the photographer had broken up with a young Swedish model. And a week later, he went to a party, and Jean-Luc hosted it with all his Playboy friends, and they drugged the punch, and they gangbanged all the poor little models. And the following week,
drugged the punch.
They were laughing about it. Yeah, they were laughing about
gosh.
It. And the photographer took a bottle, and he smashed it over the guy's head, and he became a vegetable.
Wow. I mean, the stories are just unbelievable. Zoe, you mm-hmm. also had an experience with Harvey Weinstein. What always amazes me is that there's this web and all these guys seem to somehow end up being connected. Do you get the feeling that these were just a group of bad guys, you know, creeps, or was this really organized behind the scenes?
I don't know that it was some sort of organized cabal necessarily, but it's definitely more than just a coincidence. On one hand, I think, you know, if you've got a fashion industry and you've got a bunch of insecure men who clearly need to be around beautiful women, of course they're going to be attracted to this particular industry. It's easy prey. It's easy. But at the same time, if you were a beautiful woman, at least then in the 90s, and I assume now, you encountered the same groups of people all the time, and they all were friends and they all hung together. And if they weren't close friends and they partied and associated together, I mean, there was Trump, there was Epstein, there was Jean-Luc, there was Harvey Weinstein, there was Fabrizio Lombardo, who used to live with Jean-Luc, who then later has been accused in the press of being Weinstein's pimp. And who very specifically lied to me to get me alone with Harvey. You know, you have Jeffrey Epstein and Jean-Luc starting modeling agencies so that they have access to young girls, but you have those same girls being ferried on busloads up to Mar-a-Lago and being paid to show up. So I think some of it's coincidental and some of it was very organized, and I just don't know how deep it runs, but I do know how high it goes, and that's all the way to the top.
Yeah, and you mentioned, I mean, you're both beautiful women, models are beautiful. Of course, there's going to be some flirting that goes on when you're working with men, but obviously there is a line, and this just went to a ridiculous, disgusting level. I want to ask you both real quick, now with this suicide and then also Epstein being dead, what does that mean for survivors like you both? Does it feel like there won't be justice, or is there some relief that they're both gone? Let's start with you, Zoe. I mean, does it bring any kind of closure?
Yeah, he's dead. He's gone. Bye bye. Ding dong. The witch is dead. Right. The only thing I'm sad about is that there is a large portion of his victims and survivors who do feel like they've been sort of robbed their day in court. And I felt similarly when I wasn't called to testify against Harvey in either one of those cases. I really had to go through a bit of a grieving process where I felt like I was robbed to face him and all of this stuff. But on the other hand, I kind of feel like by either killing himself or being killed, who cares? Doesn't really matter, because as long as his last moments were wretched, I'm fine. I think.
And what about you, Lauren? I want to bring in Lauren. I want to bring in Lauren real quick, just because we're running. Yeah, do you think? I mean, would you have liked to see justice in court, or do you just prefer to see him dead?
I'm just so glad that he's gone, and I think it poses an example, and I think it will at least. Others will think twice before they move forward with this kind of behavior. You know, it's got to stop.
Thank you
both.
It's
really a shame because, yeah.
Yeah, thank you both so much for sharing your stories. I know some of this was a long time ago, and it's not always easy to bring this stuff back up again. But we appreciate you both sharing your stories, and especially you, Zoe. I know you're like in the middle of the night in New Zealand. So thanks for staying up for us.
No worries. Thank you.
So Brunel's suicide came just days after another Epstein associate, Prince Andrew, settled with a woman who claimed she was forced to have sex with him by Epstein. Virginia Giuffre, victim, she was abused by Jean-Luc Brunel, accused Prince Andrew of sexually assaulting her three times when she was 17 years old. The settlement between Andrew and Giuffre keeps the case out of civil court, but not the court of public opinion. It's just one of several damaging scandals that the royal family is dealing with right now at this moment. And it has several media outlets and public polls calling for the end of the British monarchy. It's interesting how this is all connected. The royal family has been around for 37 generations, more than 1,200 years. Is it possible that it could all really end right now? I'm joined by two people who know everything about the royals. Hadley Hall Mears is a royal family expert whose work has appeared in The Hollywood Reporter and Vanity Fair. And Chloe Pantazzi is the lifestyle deputy editor for The Insider. I want to thank you both so much for joining me. Hadley, I want to start with Prince Andrew. There are reports that he thinks this settlement with Giuffre will let him rejoin the royal family. Seems like that would almost be impossible at this point. Is there really any place for him in the royal family right now?
I don't think there's any place for him in the royal family now or ever again. I think that a lot of news coming out of the palace and different camps within the royal family really tells us the story that Prince Charles is fed up with Prince Andrew, fed up with his shenanigans, and wants to keep him as far away from possible as he can from this kind of slimmed down modern monarchy that Prince Charles hopes to create when he finally becomes King Charles. You know, and the Queen had to, we believe, probably give at least £2 million to the settlement, which was something in the area of above £12 million. So this has cost the royal family a lot of money, a lot of prestige, and it's just a really sordid embarrassment. So I don't think there is any chance that Prince Andrew comes back.
£2 million. I mean, how does that make the people feel that pay these royal salaries, essentially? I mean, that can't go over well with the people in Britain.
No, it doesn't. And although this money is probably technically from her private funds that she gets from one of the duchies she controls, it's still actually the public's money. So the public is quite rightly very upset about this. But then you also see the Queen's in a pretty hard spot. This is her son. This is her favorite son. And she knew that they had to make this go away and the case not go to trial, especially since we have the Jubilee year here and also a year of transition for the monarchy where we're really seeing the torch more and more pass to Prince Charles. But yeah, the public is very upset and quite frankly, very disgusted by the whole thing.
The Queen certainly is in a difficult spot. Chloe, Prince Andrew, obviously the biggest scandal right now, making the most headlines. But then there is also Prince Charles, and a lot of questions and investigations surrounding his charity and some contributions that they may have received from Saudi Arabia. That also seems to be raising some very suspicious red flags.
Yes, that's right. And Charles himself is actually not really very much affiliated with this charity. It's his charity, but he's not the head of this charity. It's somebody else who's the head of the charity, just to make that distinction really clear. This is an investigation, obviously, and it follows reports that there had been some misplaced donations, that a Saudi had become a British citizen and honoured. So that does raise some questions and is certainly something that the palace does not need right now, especially given the drama surrounding Andrew and also the Queen's COVID-19 test result. We know that she tested positive recently this weekend. So that is also setting off some alarm bells.
I was just going to get to that. I know. I mean, all of this going on, and then could it be any worse of a moment for the Queen at her age to now test positive for COVID? And we know this is a woman that takes her job seriously and doesn't miss engagements. Hadley, from what I understand, she has missed some of her things that she had set up. Do we know how she's doing right now?
The palace is saying that she's just experiencing mild COVID symptoms, but the palace, of course, is going to be very tight-lipped about the Queen's health. She is 95 years old. Any case of COVID, even if you are vaxxed and boosted like she is dangerous for a person that age. So she is canceling some engagements. We don't really know what's going on. And we kind of just have to wait and see, probably just like her doctors and family are waiting to see and holding their breath and hoping she makes it through.
And we certainly hope she's okay, especially with the big celebrations planned coming up soon. But it just seems like all of these bad things are happening at the same moment. Chloe, I was reading about the royal rules today, and there's all of these very intricate rules that they follow. They dictate that the Queen cannot perform her duties because of ill health. If she can't, then there are four senior royals that can be appointed, what they call counselors of the state. However, two of the four options, you've got Prince Andrew. We know, we just talked about it. He's got big problems. And then her grandson, Prince Harry, who we know is nowhere even nearby and is in Los Angeles with Meghan and has totally just basically run away from the whole mess. That really sort of puts the royal family in a bit of a predicament, doesn't it, Chloe?
It does. I mean, one thing to bear in mind with the Queen's COVID-19 diagnosis, just to go back to that, is that although she is 95, which does place her at one of the highest risk in one of the highest risk categories, she, from what we understand, is also had three vaccination doses. So we know she's at least had one, which offers her some protection. The palace had confirmed that in January 2021. And then it's been widely reported since that she had a second dose after that, as well as a booster shot. A Buckingham Palace spokesperson told Insider this week that they indicated that those reports may be true. So given that, one of Insider's science reporters, Marion Ginott, looked into UK data and found that people over 90, their risk of death was actually significantly reduced if they had the three doses by around 93%, which is a very high number. So while people are very nervous about the Queen's welfare here and what could happen to the monarchy, it's really worth remembering, you know, she has a great deal of protection afforded to her by these vaccines. She has been advocating for vaccination across the UK. This is something that she and other royal family members have been very vocal about. And so we don't know what's going to happen. And I do think what happens often with the royal families is with the royal family is that so much is placed upon, you know, what happens when the Queen will pass away and when Charles becomes king. And so we're really starting to see, you know, the Queen is an elderly woman. She is 95. She has had some health setbacks. She was hospitalized in October 2021. She's been pictured using a cane. And so we know that the inevitable will happen at some point here. But yes, the royal family is in crisis right now. All eyes are on them. So this is not what they need with regards to Andrew and Charles and all the rest of it. However, I don't know if it's, you know, I do see that some people are jumping the gun. And I think, you know, the Queen, maybe just this time is needed for her to rest and recuperate. There's a lot coming up this year with the Platinum Jubilee.
Yeah, we know what a strong woman she is, and I'm sure she'll be able to beat this. And just real quick, we've only got 20 seconds left. Quickly, Hadley, do you think the royal family's really in jeopardy here? Do people really not care about them anymore? Are they really on the way out, or is this just a phase?
You know, I think, honestly, it's probably just a phase. I think the real future of the monarchy is William and Kate. They remain enormously popular. They're very likable. They're very charming. They're very service-oriented. And I really think that once maybe we get over the hump of the reign of Charles, who I think also has a lot of great ideas and is actually a much better person than a lot of people give him credit for, I think the monarchy will survive as it has for centuries.
We will see. They certainly have a history of survival and overcoming these obstacles. Hadley and Chloe, thank you so much for being with us tonight.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
All right, coming up next, Britney Spears is now free to earn and keep her own money, and she is off to a good start, signing a $15 million deal to pen a tell-all memoir. No title yet, but the potential targets are ripe for the picking. Starting with her own family. We've got more coming up next. Britney Spears has sealed a book deal reportedly worth up to $15 million, and this money is hers to spend as she pleases. Finally, the 40-year-old global megastar will release a tell-all memoir with publishing house Simon & Schuster that is sure to carpet bomb any shred of peace that might remain in the toxic Spears family. The 15 mil she's reportedly receiving is one of the biggest book deals in history, only falling shy of the Obama's paycheck, which surpassed 60 million. But the pop star tied Bill Clinton's 2001 deal that was also worth $15 million. News of the book comes on the heels of younger sister Jamie Lynn's tell-all, which literally couldn't even get past its original working title, I Must Confess. It set off a firestorm in the Free Britney Army, as it's a famous lyric from Britney's hit Baby One More Time. They did not like that. Jamie Lynn would eventually change the title to Things I Should Have Said. Britney isn't really worried about things she should have said in response to her little sister's book. She pretty much left it all on the table or on the gram when she posted, "Congrats, bestseller. The nerve of you to sell a book now and talk S, but you're effing lying. I wish you would take a lie detector test so all these masses of people see you're lying through your teeth about me. I wish the almighty Lord would come down and show this whole world that you're lying and making money off of me. You are scum, Jamie Lynn." Wow. Crazy drama with the sisters. Practically a book and of itself, and most likely a preview of the blistering firestorms that are still to come in Britney's book. The crazy part is Jamie Lynn is likely not even to be the main target. Britney's 13-year-old conservatorship ended in November of last year, and she is really sure to have a chapter or two dedicated to her parents, specifically her mother, Lynn, who she accuses of pulling all the strings behind the over decade-long financial prison that we all know that she lived in. So coming up, Britney's free as a bird now, no longer a slave to you, as she might put it, free to make money, free to sing, and yes, now free to tell all. So is Justin Timberlake shaking in his boots tonight? That's coming up next. The image of Britney Spears' family tree may look like it's been rampaged by a wildfire over the last few years. It is chock full of public Instagram wars, a 13-year conservatorship, and court battles drawing the Free Britney army of supporters from literally all over the world. And now the recently freed pop star is telling all after signing a ginormous $15 million book deal. Joining us now with all the dirty details is Banfield senior story editor Paula Froelich. Paula, I got to tell you, a lot of people were surprised by this $15 million headline. It didn't totally shock me. I mean, there's so much interest in her right now. What did you think?
You know what? I think she is worth every darn dollar and red penny. Here's the deal. People are saying, well, Obama's got this, Clinton's got this, but Obama and Clinton were out there every day talking about what they thought and what they said. Nobody has really heard from Britney since the conservatorship started in over a decade. So we don't know what she's going to write. And you know who's going to buy this book? Everybody.
Well, you're right. We haven't heard from her. I mean, I follow her on Instagram. Not going to lie, I'm a Britney fan. You know, so you get some little tidbits on the Instagram quite frequently. Some of the videos, I mean, again, coming from the place of being a Britney fan, I am sometimes worried about her. I want her to be okay. I mean, based on these new videos, she does a lot of dancing videos. I mean, do you think she's in a better place now?
You know what, Brian? I think she's in a better place because she's out of the conservatorship. This is just a crazy thing for her to be under. This is a woman who was functional. She was making her own money. She was supporting a village of people. And yet she couldn't actually have control of her life. And not only just her money. Her father had an IUD, so she couldn't have any more children. She was spied on with cameras in her house. It was a crazy situation. And now some people, yes, they look at the Instagram and they go, oh, that's a little weird. She's spinning again or whatever. Is that normal? Well, you know what? It's normal for her. And I think she's just experiencing freedom for the first time in a long time. And if you were kind of locked up for 13 years and forced to work, you might be a little wacky as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the details of the conservatorship, Paul, like you say, I mean, are just unbelievable. They worked her like a dog from what's in those documents and then, you know, reaped the benefits. So obviously we know there's going to, you know, we know she's not happy with Jamie Lynn. Obviously bad relationship with the dad based on everything that's gone on. Who else do you think is going to get called out in this book?
You know what, Brian? There's a lot of people to get called out. She had a series of managers. She had a series of lawyers, none of whom really protected her. And I think she's got a lot to say, and I'm here for all of it. And, you know, you said something about working her like a dog, and people don't realize when she did a four-year residency in Vegas, she only went out two nights in 4 years. The rest of it was kept under wraps.
Yeah, she's a worker, it's going to be interesting to see what's in the book, and then of course all the interviews that normally come along with a book that's released like this. So we're going to see and hear a lot from Britney. But what about her performing? I mean, I personally missed the concerts. Do you think she'll be back? You think she's going to be on the stage soon?
You know what, Brian? I did not miss the concerts, and I can't wait for her to be back. I am actually hearing from a lot of people today in Vegas that they are pounding on her door. You know, she did a four-year residency from 2013 to 2017. In 2019, she said, I am never going to work again as long as my dad is in charge of me in this conservatorship. You know, now she's free and Vegas is calling and they really want her back. And she has a chance to make a lot of money. Before, she was making around $450,000 a night. I think that was before taxes, but still pretty great. And now she has a chance to make Adele money. And Adele was being offered over $700,000 a night. And everybody wants a piece of that.
I just hope she can be okay, Paula. Again, coming from the place of being a fan, because even though it's so easy to hate on her family because of what they've done to her, I mean, at the end of the day, it's still her family. And that's still her sister. I mean, you think they'll ever reconcile, or do you think that this family is just torn apart forever?
You know, Brian, here's the deal. It is her family. That is true. But she has been working and supporting them since she was about 12. And I think that really messes with the dynamic. And it really messes with someone's head. I mean, how do you get over that when you're the breadwinner and you're not even wearing your big girl pants yet? That's a problem. I think hopefully they can mend, because of course we all want families to get along at some point. But I also think, you know, she's got a really great lawyer right now. She's got a great boyfriend named Sam. And I think everyone out there is just really rooting for her to find healthy people to surround herself with and really loving and supporting people and get that love and support she didn't feel she got her entire life.
Yeah, we're all rooting for her. We know she's also in love right now. So let's hope things are good moving forward. Thanks for being with us, Paula.
Absolutely.
Okay, still ahead, a segment that I'm looking forward to. You know I love dogs. You cannot put a price on a dog's love. You really can't. But you can spend thousands on what you hope is a fully trained, life-changing service dog and wind up with a dud. After a break, learn to get what you pay for from an industry that is off the chain. Tomorrow on Morning in America, a live report from Ukraine. Hear what is happening on the ground and compare what we're being told here by what's really happening over there. That's coming up tomorrow morning on News Nation. Okay, so nowadays, anything from a pit bull to a python can be an emotional support animal, which is fine until its owner needs support. Somewhere animals aren't usually welcome. And then things can get awkward, but service animals are different. For one thing, under the Americans with Disabilities Act, a service animal is a dog or a miniature horse, period. No ferrets. For another, they provide service. We've all seen guide dogs for the blind, but there are hearing dogs, mobility assistance dogs, autism service dogs, allergy detection dogs, and even diabetic and seizure alert dogs, and each can cost as much as a new car. It takes at least half a year and a half. It takes at least a year and a half to train a service dog, and more than that, half actually flunk out. Those that don't, they can fetch anywhere from $15,000 to $40,000, none of which is covered by insurance. The few nonprofit groups that train and donate dogs can't come close to meeting demand, so for-profit trainers will fill the void. No training required for them, no regulation, no certification for the supposedly trained dogs, and of course, no guarantees. And if you think that's a bad system, my next guests definitely agree. David Favre is a law professor at Michigan State University specializing in animal law, and Jennifer Cote is executive director of Medical Mutt Service Dogs in Indianapolis and author of Selecting and Training Your Own Service Dog. Jennifer, I want to start with you. I see you've got your dog with you there. So cute. Tell me about this dog.
This is Oscar, and Oscar comes from a shelter nearby, and he's currently in training. So he's a beginner right now. He's only had about 2 months of training.
So what will Oscar be trained to do? And at the end of it all, what would a dog like Oscar cost?
Well, we don't know yet what he's going to become. All our dogs go through a lot of months of training, and we select the few that actually make the cut that have the qualities that we're looking for really at the very end of their training. So he might be either a diabetic alert dog or a seizure alert dog or a psychiatric service dog, which is, you know, which are the dogs that we specialize in.
And what about the cost? Oh, gosh, he's so cute. He's almost like a little Benji. What would a dog like him cost at the end of all the training?
So what they cost us is around $25,000. And
wow.
We look for sources, you know, for grants and donations to fund these dogs, but we just don't have enough to come close to making these dogs more affordable. So we ask $15,000 for a diabetic alert dog and $17,000 for a psychiatric service dog. So the more donations come in, of course, the more we would be able to lower those costs.
And Jennifer, you obviously run an upstanding business and do the right thing with training these dogs. But I want to bring you in, David, because there are a lot of companies out there doing the wrong thing, ripping people off. And with the demand as high as it is, it seems like a lot could go wrong here, David.
Oh, yes, very much so. I'm afraid the demand side of things combined with the Internet as a source of information is really a disaster for a lot of people who aren't very careful with what they're doing.
And no regulation, David. I mean, it doesn't seem like the government is staying on top of this. Does that surprise you?
Well, one would hope for some control here, but no, there's nobody has stepped forward and figured out how to do this. It would be a rather extensive enterprise to have to set up an agency where there is no agency right now that could determine who is a good provider of service dogs. That actually is not a very easy thing to figure out.
Yeah, it's tricky. Jennifer, it's got to be difficult when you meet these families, and I'm sure you talk to so many on the phone, and they need the dog so badly. People don't have that kind of money. What do you do in a situation like that?
Oh, you're absolutely right. And we would love to be able to provide these dogs for free, but we just can't. If we lower the price, we would have to cut corners, and that's not what we want to do, because cutting corners would be, you know, providing a product that's not, and I'm sorry to talk to you about a product, buddy, but would be, you know, providing dogs that are not fully trained or not providing the support that the people need. So unfortunately, we don't really have a choice but charging what we charge right at this moment. But I want to come back.
So what do families do? Do they get a loan? Do they get a loan, Jennifer? Or, do they sell a car? What do you do if you just don't have the money and your kid desperately needs it?
Well, we discourage people from getting into debt for a service dog. Really, what is the best way to do is the best thing to do is to go out and fundraise and look for ways to grow your maybe take a year or two to get the funds that you need through your own networking, through your church or your friends, your family, and that's how most people will afford these dogs.
Makes sense. Thank you so much, David and Jennifer and your cute pup there. Good advice, and hopefully people will be careful. We know how important these dogs are. So thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And coming up, service dogs are expensive, but what is the most expensive dog ever sold? Coming up, we'll find out the eye-popping, jaw-dropping price one man paid just last year for his cuddly canine. That's coming up after the break. Okay, welcome back, and thanks so much for joining us. The trivia question: how much was the most expensive dog sold ever? Don't think thousands, think millions. A man in China dropped a jaw-dropping 12 million yuan. That's almost $2 million on a golden-haired Tibetan Mastiff puppy. Wow. The breeder, Zhang Genyang, told the local Chinese news the breed, which is revered as pandas are in China, has lion's blood in it. And that is why he wanted. I say rescue if you can. If you can, there's so many dogs in the pound. It's better to rescue. I'm back in for Banfield tomorrow night. Thanks so much for joining us. We'll see you tomorrow.